From all corners of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Midnight Movie Cowboys, and pretty special episode this week. I am joined by Stuart over in Australia. Say hello, Stuart.
Whatto, lads. Got me pith helmet on. I'm going to go hunt me some lions. I'm going to pith you all off. Bam, bam. Yes. Take that, Cecil.
Oh, heavens to Murgatroy. They're trying to hunt Snagglepuss. It's terrible, even.
Yeah.
Trying to mount me, even. And
what a gay name for a lion. Cecil, really? You look like he fucking deserves it.
Maybe in Zimbabwe it's not so au fait.
Like if the lion's name was Mugabe, and I could sort of understand, but, you know, Cecil.
Who apparently ate an entire zoo at his birthday bash recently.
So when's...
Robert Mugabe.
Yeah, Mugabe did, yeah.
Ate a few elephants, a few... lions, tigers, bears, whatever they have in Africa.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, Wizard of Oz joke too. There.
He ate Dorothy, too.
Yeah, I'm sure he did. Mugabe's got the lips for it.
Oh, God. Okay. And we're joined also by John over in Colorado.
Hell yeah, some bitch.
Yeah. And we're also joined by a special guest from South Africa, in the hills of Montsegur, Mr. Richard Stanley. Say hello.
I'll do that impression later.
God damn it, John. Fucking roll with me here.
I can't.
Richard, actually, he is here. He's just actually hiding in the back, dressed as like a dog boy or something. So,
Well, yeah, the funny thing is, we probably, if we had really thought about it, we probably could have gotten him for the show.
We probably could have.
Because I just found out he did a interview with the Obnoxious and Anonymous podcast. I'm like, oh my God, we could have really somehow something to get him. It's like, come on.
I'll tell you what, when we do hardware, which I dare say will be a pretty much a fair chance, we'll try then.
Yeah, that's
because I'm sure he doesn't really want to talk about the documentary tonight. I'm sure he said
I wanted to ask him about the Wild Geese reboot he was writing in the mid-90s that was supposed to have Asia Argento in it and was endorsed by Roger Moore.
That should have been starring Marlon Brando as well. It could have been called Wild and Obese.
Yeah.
So if you haven't guessed, guys, we're talking about the documentary Lost Soul today, which is about Richard Stanley and his disastrous attempt to adapt The Island of Dr. Moreau, which eventually became the John Frankenheimer film starring Val Kilmer and Marlon Brando.
Rob Moreau as well.
Yeah, and David Thewlis, who I thought was weirdly not mentioned at all.
Right?
He was never mentioned.
I was like, why? David Thewlis is the main character in the movie. You see him like in a shot once at like a table. And
yeah, yeah.
It.
And you think like even Fairuza would have mentioned him. Fairuza Balk would have mentioned him as well. No relation.
Right.
Because she dated him for many years. So I think he met her on the set of that. So, yeah, not even mentioned. So, I don't know.
No, weirdly not mentioned. So I don't know what's up there. But I don't know. Maybe just David Thewlis was too normal in the movie and in real life to...
He may have sent an injunction because supposedly...
Be.
Stanley said he didn't even mean for... His interview in the movie is not meant for a documentary. It was meant for as a bonus thing on some compilation horror film deal he made with David Gregory.
And
basically he didn't even know that David Gregory was using all that interview stuff about Dr. Moreau to basically build a documentary around it, and he actually wanted to stop it because he was embarrassed by it.
Oh, well, I mean, he does reveal a lot of things in it that I was like, you know, I thought maybe Stanley was just a weird dude, but there was some stuff where I was like, yeah, I'd be kind of embarrassed.
Yeah.
People get that.
when you put it up next to Hodorowski's Dune, this seems completely tame, really.
Well, this felt a lot like Hearts of Darkness to me. except it doesn't have a happy ending. You know?
Well, I was way more entertained by this than Jodorowsky's Dune, because Jodorowsky's Dune is pretty much interview what it would have been, and then you see all the storyboards. And this, the movie was actually made.
Yes.
Just not with the original director and his original script.
And the problem, like, Jodorowsky's Dune, it's an interesting movie, but it's a little too much, it's too worshipful. You know what I'm saying? Like, whenever
this would have been the greatest movie
ever. Oh, it would have been the most influential sci-fi movie of all time, and blah, blah, blah. And it's everybody talking about what a genius Jodorowsky is. And, you know, it's really interesting when he talks about the process of the movie and making of it, blah, blah, blah. But, I don't know, documentaries that are worshipful of their subjects just, I mean, there's always, like, something missing from them for me. They're just a little too, like, they have all these fans, like that dirtbag, what's his name, Devin Faraci, talking like his butthole mouth undulating about thinking. I'm like, what is this guy doing here? Low Jodorowsky.
Can I put something to bed now? I want everybody out here to please put this to bed. Please, nobody else ever mention about fucking David Lynch's Return of the Jedi, what it would have been like. It didn't get made, so just let it go.
David Lynch's Return of the Jedi just would have been the same movie, because it was...
Exactly. You know, exactly.
Like, it's controlled by Lucas.
Yeah, it was a George... And David Lynch said that. He said it would have been George Lucas's film.
Yeah. Please, you know? Please don't sort of, you know, harp on about it. It didn't get made, so don't go there.
Wouldn't have seen Leia dancing on and stepping on Ewok fetuses while Han Solo screams in an air conditioner.
It would have been a Lucasfilm production.
Yeah, it just would have been David Lynch doing what George told him to do.
Yeah.
Like, that's what... And then Richard Marquand said I think he told Joe Esterhaus claims that Richard Marquand said that George Lucas was just looking over his shoulder the whole time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
That's all it would have been.
Why wouldn't that be the case?
Yeah.
You know? He wouldn't have had, you know, Warwick Davis screaming, "I'm not an Ewok, so don't just let it go."
You wouldn't have gotten the all Chewbacca, the all Wookiee planet movie that they were talking about. Oh, but but Island of Dogs, like, because are you guys fans of Richard Stanley's work? Because I know,
define fan.
Well, do you like Hardware? Do you like Dust Devil? Do you like his movies? You know, his film.
I saw Hardware in a theater on first release. The same day I saw Goodfellas, and I thought it was interesting. I didn't think it was the greatest movie ever, but it was interesting. And I knew he made it on a very low budget, like a microscopic. It was like $2 million or something crazy.
And it looks great for that much.
Yeah, for that much, it was really imaginative. I saw it the same day I saw I Come in Peace, the Dolph Lundgren movie.
Oh, God.
Also known as Dark Angel.
I also saw Pacific Heights, the really bad Judd Schlesinger.
Oh, my. I saw that at the theater as well. That was not good. The Michael
Keaton
flick. Yeah.
You know, yeah. Stealing the pipes. I Come in Peace. I saw all that stuff in one day, which is kind of amazing looking back at like 1991. It's like that's what you could see in the theater, you know, or 1990 or whenever it was. It was like you could see all those movies in one day in one city, you know, because I just decided I hadn't been to the movies in months. So I was just going to overdo it. And I wanted to see most of those films. So I just went and saw all of them. And Hardware was the first one. And I just remember liking it, but I didn't think, oh, this is awesome. You know, it's not Terminator.
I felt the same way. I was like, I thought it was a really interesting movie, and I thought I want to watch it again someday.
And I saw Dust Devil on DVD years later. I think I tried watching on videotape and found it unwatchable. And then I think I watched the DVD and thought it was interesting, but just okay. And this was long after I had already heard a lot of the Dr. Moreau stories, through mutual friends of Richard Stanley, that I had already heard some of the stuff that's in this documentary.
I saw Hardware on video when it came out. I'm like, I don't get it. I mean, I liked it. Lemmy was in it briefly, but it was about it. I mean,
it had Iggy Pop as the DJ, too.
Yeah, right. So, yeah, that was about it. It was like, I mean, it looks great. Whoever made this has got a vision for sure, but it didn't connect with me whatsoever. So
I thought it looked almost as good as the 80s Ridley Scott movies for like a fraction of the price. You know,
right? Well, another thing was that's been kind of revisionist history, because I remember reading the Cinefantastiques from that time. He the movie plagiarized a 2000 AD comic.
Yes, it did. And nobody brings that up.
And now they act like it was always permitted and it was always based. No, there was a lawsuit.
Yeah.
And Richard Stanley was claiming he never read comic books. So there's, and he, the whole storyline came to him in a dream and all that. And he still kind of.
We get rubbed the dream stuff in this.
Yeah, it rubs away the idea. I mean, and if you look at the shock strip, it's like, oh man, it's like a full on adaptation, but more faithful than Marvel movies are to their source.
Yeah, I mean, it felt like a 2000 AD comic book. The movie did. Like I thought it felt like it could have taken place in the Judge Dredd universe. You know.
And supposedly he turned down Judge Dredd when it was a Stallone project, but also He almost made Solomon Kane back in the late 90s.
Ooh, there's a movie we'll be doing soon. Solomon Kane.
Yeah, that might have been interesting if he had done it. So,
well, he likes the wide brimmed hat people in movies.
Yeah, he dresses like Kioma or Django.
Yeah,
he's a big spaghetti western fanatic, and he always dresses like a character from a spaghetti western. You know,
but no, I like Hardware and Dust Devil, but I don't like love them. I've only seen both once.
I haven't seen Dust Devil. I've not seen it.
I like it, but I was interested in both, and I thought they were clearly works by a talented guy. But it feels like he got out of his depth with Moreau, and it sort of killed his career.
It did.
But I'd read all the stories though about him. You know, getting fired, like having problems with Kilmer and Brando, and then ending up on the set in a dog man outfit. And I wasn't sure if that was true or not because it just sounded too weird. But
has anybody else heard of?
I had heard about that years ago, and then when they show it to you, it's like, oh yeah.
Has anybody else heard from other filmmakers how much of a pain in the ass Val Kilmer is? I know Joel Schumacher swore never to go near Val Kilmer again.
There have been a lot of stories about him being a jerk. The height of his powers,
nobody works with him twice.
Yeah,
like no director works with him twice. It seems
it's odd because I don't have times mellowed out Val Kilmer because I actually follow him on Facebook. He seems like a pretty affable sort of guy.
His,
he's not
his Facebook page is really entertaining.
It really is. Yeah, it's like
I've never seen it. I guess it's something to follow now.
Yeah, he actually replies to people and retweets shit. So yep, I think a bit of a fall from grace. From the A-list for Val Kilmer has sort of humbled him a bit.
He's not a Iceman anymore.
He's not
Mr. Redbox premiere, basically.
Yeah.
I'm trying to see if he's worked with anybody twice. He's worked with Tony Scott twice.
Probably they took as many drugs as each other. I think that's why.
Because he played Elvis in True Romance.
I think that's why Tony Scott threw himself off the cliff. He must have realized.
Oh my God. I forgot he was in The Saint. Jesus.
Yeah, he was awful.
That was not good.
Did anybody here see Masked and Anonymous?
No.
The Bob Dylan movie.
Yeah.
I watched it and couldn't even remember that I watched it.
It's horrible. It's such a pretentious pile of shit.
Oh, yeah. What's that guy who directed Borat?
Yeah, Charles. What's his name?
Larry Charles,
yeah. Oh, God. I saw Master Anonymous in the theater, and... Ooh, bad.
I love Bob Dylan's music. He shouldn't make movies.
No, he's a terrible actor.
He shouldn't make music either. I fucking stand Bob Dylan.
I'll say, like, he is the best and worst thing about Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid. The soundtrack, great. His performance, terrible.
No, really?
My name's
wanted
Alias.
To see that. Is that the one with is that the Peckinpah one? Is
yeah.
That him? Yeah. I've always wanted to see that. I just never have.
It's a good movie. You should watch it. The soundtrack is awesome. Like I love the soundtrack. But Dylan is he's not in the movie that much, but he's pretty dreadful in the scenes. He's like they're like, and Billy the Kid's like, and who are you? And he's like, well, that all depends on who's asking. They call me Alias. You know? It's like, fuck off.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
But no, it looks like that's mostly true, though. Val Kilmer doesn't work with the same directors twice very much.
No, and he's worked with
Oliver Stone a couple times too. Alexander.
Oh, wow.
You notice it's the nutcases that he works with?
Yeah. Yeah, it's the people.
It is. Yeah.
It's like the guy who jumps off a bridge and then Tony Scott, and then it's Oliver Stone. Yeah. It's just not normal at all.
The guy's taking enough drugs to make 10 people. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I've got to download his Conan script, his original Conan the Barbarian script.
Because I had heard that it was a sci-fi futuristic one, but
yeah, it's only one or two scenes that
I don't know where I'd heard that, but apparently that's not true.
The Oliver Stone,
yeah,
Conan, yeah, that's Conan the one where Conan smuggles all that hash into Turkey. I think it is.
it had a barbarian army versus an army of snake men.
Okay.
Like it would have cost like crazy 8 times the money of Star Wars back then. But supposedly he had already gotten quotes from Jim Danforth and all these stop motion experts and guys like Rick Baker about doing the Lizard Men and stuff. Like it was going to be a big thing if Stone had done it. It would have been like a psychedelic, you know, crazy, actually it might have been a big hit.
Yeah, music by the Doors on it. And
yeah. Who knows?
Yeah. This is the end.
Well, yeah, his version of Conan was way more trippier. It was more like the comic book brought to life, or the old Howard stories. There was a lot more of that in there than Milius's kind of barbarian Vikings in the desert. You know,
that Alfred E. Newman, the guy, is that his name?
Who's that?
Alfred E. Newman.
Robert E. Howard.
Oh, Robert E. Howard.
Alfred E. Newman's the
Mad Magazine.
Mad Magazine.
Oh, Jesus.
Mad Magazine.
I'm thinking I'm half asleep, people.
I can see how you get those confused.
It's the E, I tell you. It's the E. That's what gets me.
Yeah, it is the middle initial E.
Yeah, not the drug E, the actual middle initial E, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway, when did you guys first encounter the Island of Dr. Moreau? Did you see it when it came out?
I remember seeing the poster when it came out and wanting to see it, but I wasn't allowed to.
Who wouldn't allow you to?
My parents.
Okay, now that is the perfect example of why kids need to listen to your parents.
Yeah, I know, right? I didn't see it till years later because I saw Island of Lost Souls, the Charles Laughton version.
Holy shit. You know what? Just quickly there, when I watched this documentary, I saw that was based on Dr. Moreau. I've seen that thing in friggin' DVD stores for $2 and never knew. It was like, it's an old crappy Bela Lugosi film, so I'm not going to bother with it.
No, yeah. it's good. I like it quite a bit. It was hated by Wells at the time, but it was kind of, it's one of those pre-code Hollywood movies that's kind of weird and racy in a way that later Hollywood movies weren't early on.
Yeah.
But it's a really entertaining movie, and I went, you know, I never watched Island of Dr. Moreau, that later one, and I had seen the Richard Stanley movies, Hardware and Dust Devil, so I was like, well, he worked on it, I'll check it out, and I watched it. And I was blown away by how terrible yet hilariously entertaining it was.
It was fun. I'd seen the what's the one from 77, John? Who's in that one?
Burt Lancaster.
Yeah, I'd seen that and I enjoyed that one.
That was a big hit at the time, or a really pushed film by AIP.
It just got re-released on Blu-ray.
It's on Netflix right now, so you can actually watch. You can watch the Burt Lancaster Island of Dr. Moreau, and you can also watch the Richard Stanley documentary.
And Richard Stanley's sitting there going, I saw the one with Burt Lancaster, who was a very good Dr. Moreau. However, it was the first film I watched where I was very upset and demanded my money back afterwards.
I love what how he called it. He goes, it's ham-fisted.
Yeah!
Very ham-fisted, and I did not see a woman turn into a leopard shown on the poster.
As shown in the poster, which was germinated in my mind as an idea that I wanted to bring to life myself.
And he said Burt Lancaster's name, so I was like, Burt Lancaster, which is actually quite good. like, his accent is just such a weird mixture of different, you know, countries.
When I think of Colonel Kurtz, I think of, like, I think he needs to play Kurtz.
If I were making a movie, I would totally hire Richard Stanley to play a character.
I would just want him to be the guy who's gone native, down in the swamp.
He wouldn't need any prep. He's been doing it for how many years now?
No,
living out in the wilderness.
He really does live out in the he's lived out in the jungle and all that stuff. He's he'll always tell you he would have been an anthropologist before he was a filmmaker. And the funny thing about like the documentary is it kind of shows like, okay, this is what I noticed about him. He had storyboards. He had all these crazy ideas. He has all this inventiveness. And I'm thinking right away, he can't get anything made in Hollywood because they don't want a director that does all that stuff.
No, they don't.
It's already designed everything. And because they're going to hire a production designer. They're going to hire, you know, creature effects people to design this stuff
they're
or whatever.
Hire people who want to put their own stamp on it. You know, that's,
right, right.
You make a movie like that, there's a ton of creative people who come in and go, okay, well, I want to do my thing, you know?
Right, because you always hear that about these directors that they'll bring from foreign countries. Guillermo del Toro is another one who I think is grossly overrated. But
yeah.
He's one of those guys that carries around a sketchbook and is always designing things for the movies. And I don't know if you ever actually see them in his films. It's like because you know they'll say, well, no, we're paying the storyboard artist.
No, Johnny actually carries a sketchbook full of designs. He's also got another sketchbook, which is bigger than the other sketchbook, with all the films he's going to actually do he's got lined up.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Which is about 865 at the moment. Yeah.
But he's going to do Tarzan, Frankenstein, and Abbott and Costello reboot, and God knows what.
Didn't
else.
He publish his sketchbook? Like the
he may have
the Cabinet of Curiosities or something.
I wouldn't doubt it. It's like he does always announce and attach himself to a new movie every week.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
He really does.
And then he leaves the movie 3 months later.
What was it? He was attached to do the Silent Hills video game with Hideo Kojima, and then Konami just like. Went apeshit and dissolved Kojima projects and, you know, said they're not making video games anymore. They're just going to do pachinko machines. And because Del Toro was attached to that project, it's his fault. I blame him.
Yeah. I do think there's something about the guy that somehow gets him fired or disconnected from stuff almost as soon as he's hired. God. There's something we're not hearing about right now.
Well,
I've always heard he's a nice guy, and maybe that's one of his problems. I don't know.
Could be. I mean, well, because the thing I noticed about Stanley in this movie was that he wasn't able to complete this movie, the Island of Dr. Moreau, was that he didn't seem interested in playing the whole Hollywood politics game.
Yeah.
He didn't want to take meetings. He didn't want to do all that stuff. And, you know, he could have just been more interested in smoking weed in his treehouse on the set. But, I mean, a lot of meetings are bullshit. They're just people jacking off. It's not really anything productive.
It's,
so I can't really blame him for not wanting to do it. But, like, it just seemed like he wasn't willing to play that game. And so when he wouldn't play it, it sort of collapsed on him. You know?
It simply comes down.
What I found so interesting was, yeah, go ahead, Stu.
It simply comes down to the fact that he is just too out there for Hollywood. He's too out there for him.
Yeah, and when you don't play their game, I mean, you're obviously more interested in your own creative thing, and when you're not interested in you know
all the butt licking that goes with it. Yeah,
all the ego massaging. Like,
yeah,
this is what stunned me is it was New Line Cinema, and then I realized that Wes Craven had similar problems with them because I always thought they were this independent that made genre movies and they didn't really play the Hollywood game, and that's why they were doing so well.
John, there's still a business, mate. There's still a business. That's in the end, they're still out to make money.
Really big in the 90s, you know.
Oh yeah,
it's like with Mike DeLuca as an executive and Robert Shea acting like a big corporate guy, and this was the guy who basically bought the John Waters films and distributed those in the 70s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that was then.
And
you know,
suddenly he's not trusting the artist. You know, he's not trusting the director and. You know, pumping money into this thing, getting Marlon Brando, and the pitch of Bruce Willis and James Woods, I thought sounded way better.
Not Bruce Willis. I was not sold.
Well, and the thing about Willis is he's kind of a wild card too because he has a reputation for not wanting to cooperate on films he's not interested in. Harrison Ford's that way too.
Yeah.
Where when they think the movie's not going to be that great, they just will not. Budge. They
honestly,
just wait. Been on the film going, dog people.
They'll show up, but they will not give a fuck.
You really only have to look at a Bruce Willis poster these days to get an idea of what he's going to be like in the film. If he looks bored on the poster, which is just about every one of them, you know, that's what you're going to get yourself in for. Somebody out there did a montage. Like they clipped out just Bruce Willis out of the posters he's done for the last 10. It's basically the same shot. It's the same look and the same shot and the same angle. Everything. It's the same. It's ridiculous.
he's been pretty bad since he divorced Demi.
Yeah.
Yeah, Demi couldn't take
no
it.
No experimentation there at all.
Yeah.
And they talk about that in the how that was why he left the movie was because of his divorce with Demi. But getting Brando in the movie, like even Bob Shea said he was really pissed that they hired Brando because they just made Don Juan DeMarco with him and he was a nightmare on that film.
I'd always heard Brando was a nightmare.
Well,
on anything
he like they said, they said he wouldn't learn his lines. Brando hasn't memorized a script since like before The Godfather. Like he was working off cue cards in The Godfather.
He was.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. No,
oh my
like Brando
goodness.
Used to memorize scripts. He would not do it. And like when it just a lot of these so-called great actors, a lot of them just became like whores when they like Klaus Kinski even said, "I just do the person who offers me the most money like a prostitute." You know,
maybe
then
someone
he goes back to Germany and rapes his daughter.
Yeah,
maybe oh, someone God. Should have given Brando cue cards on how to be a father. He would have had kids still.
Yeah, no shit. Jesus. Like, no, his family really imploded.
They really did. Like, that's a
his
rough.
His son, like, murdered someone or something?
Yeah,
like,
the daughter's boyfriend or something that it was. From...
Yeah, it was insane. Like,
it was crazy back in the 90s.
Yeah, Brando's had a horrible reputation. Like, I mean, like, another movie.
Where were the Native Americans back then to help him out? They wouldn't be seen.
Like, yeah, no shit. But like Hearts of Darkness, you hear more nightmare stories about Brando in that movie too. For Apocalypse Now.
Yeah.
I mean, he showed up like grossly overweight, didn't read the script, didn't know it. You know, like Coppola looks like he's about to lose his mind in that film.
Well, I remember I saw Island of Dr. Moreau on opening day because like I didn't have anything else to do with. I think I was unemployed. I went to see
No shit, John.
I went to see it opening day, and I kind of walked out going, "What the hell did I just watch?"
Well, it's such a fucking crazy movie. Like,
I mean, by the point it gets to like Val Kilmer imitating Brando,
I know it comes down and he's doing the Brando impersonation.
Just going, I was like, "Oh my god, this movie went totally off the rails," and Frank and I were just didn't care. Like, I knew what had happened because I'd kept up with it in Fangoria and Cine Fantastic. In the magazines at the time, but it's like you could tell Frankenheimer lost control, just let them just go crazy with it.
He was dealing with two prima donna actors and was just kind of like, whatever, just let them do their thing. I don't give a fuck. I'm getting paid.
Even David Thewlis completely miscast.
Yeah, David
like,
Thewlis.
Why do you have this guy who looks like Eric Idle? It's just sort of your lead.
What was so funny, David Thewlis the whole time just looks like the straight man in a comedy.
He's like Bud Abbott.
Yeah, exactly like Bud Abbott. Yeah.
Chicken. There's no beast men.
But just
chicken.
like so much the Marlon Brando Dr. Moreau performance and his little pal. It
oh my god,
so much
that fucking little midget put me off my ham and cheese croissant this morning. I seriously couldn't eat it. I'm like, oh my god.
I mean,
wasn't he the little shrimp from the Eurotrash movie Ratman?
I don't know. I've never heard of it.
I think he was. There was a fairly notorious Eurotrash film called Ratman. It was like a horror movie. It didn't get released in America.
That's not the. Hang on. Is that the?
Because they used that midget.
Was it the? No, wait. Is that the? No, he wasn't in the one in the Sandra Locke Rat Boy film.
No. This is a totally different thing. It's a very obscure horror film that I think was Italian finance or multi-euro financing, and I think he played the Ratman. Because I think, 1988. I just found it on the...
Honestly, you know what? You know what would have been awesome, John? That that guy and...
yes, he was.
Wing together would have been awesome. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you got to pair that...
Who is now dead. They did mention that. 2006, he died at age 38 in Providence, Rhode Island.
Yep.
Who? Wing?
No.
Nelson De La Rosa.
Oh, okay. No, I'm talking about Wing.
No.
I'm just saying, if you had to pair those two up together, it would have been a good movie.
Yeah, it would have been the Batman versus Superman of midget movies.
There's a fucking documentary I've been waiting to see, The Search for Wing. I can't find anywhere.
Yeah, has it been released yet?
I don't believe so.
No, it got released over here 2 years ago on the Melbourne International
Film
Festival.
Circuit, but...
Yeah, it was over here 2 years ago in 2013 in the film festival. I just wonder what the hell
it's
going.
I guess it hasn't gotten a release, I guess. I don't know.
I had to check JB. It's probably on been on DVD the last year and a half, probably. Now my luck.
But I love the stories about Nelson De La Rosa being an asshole and punching people in the nuts.
I liked him actually dancing on the on the disco floor.
Like, hey. Yeah, I know. Oh, God. And, like, him trying to have sex with that Australian actress who played the pig woman. Yeah.
Well, what's so funny is, like, they were all living on per diem for, like, 6 months and just, like, going through new lines of money and forming their own, like, hippie party circuit in the hotel room.
Gosh, it sounded like Lord of the Flies or something.
Damn, there you go. There you go. Hang on. The search for Wing Wings on DVD over here. Two DVD and CD set for $20.
Oh, you guys already have it? Shit.
We got it.
Available 17th of December last year, so, yeah. Okay, I need to go pick that shit up after we finish this.
I've seen For Your Hide Only, so we need to do a Wing Wing show.
Oh, that's on. I got that on a double feature disc with For Your Hide Only and Agent 00.5, whatever the hell the film's called. I can't remember, something like that. Yeah.
Some short joke, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's all the film is one massive short joke, but.
I love how in those movies, in For Your Hide Only, the villain in the movie, like Wing Wing's like a dwarf or whatever, like he's symmetrical, but the villain's a midget, you know? So they have a dwarf midget fight. Like one's symmetrical, one's not. He's clearly evil because he's not symmetrical. And
it's too bad they couldn't afford Billy Barty.
Oh, God.
Billy Barty, whose greatest role was in UHF. As the cameraman.
Oh, no.
It was also a great meaningless joke on SCTV where a guy, Caballero's in a meeting and he keeps going, Billy Barty, and everybody laughs. He goes, I just like saying Billy Barty.
No. Best performance by Billy Barty.
Has there ever been a better name for a dwarf?
No, not Night Patrol. Don't you bring up Night Patrol, Stuart.
No. Skate Town USA. Holy shit. That is a drug fuck of a movie, that one. I read a fairly in-depth article on that. Well, I think they interviewed Scott Baio and it may have even been Patrick Swayze at the time while he was still alive, and they just said there was just cocaine everywhere in that film, on that set, and they said like one of the worst offenders was Billy Barty. He was just off his face all the time, high on coke. Like, hey, oh my god. Oh yeah, totally. But yeah,
they proudly show off the nicotine stains in their fingers and the fallen out nose cavity.
Yeah,
the fucking ruined septum in their nose.
Yeah, party.
Well, the disappearing septum. Yeah, yeah. Anyway, get back to this, Dr. Moreau. Yeah. So, what did you guys think about when you first, John? You said you hated it. Anna, what did you think of it?
The documentary or the...
No, movie? The movie when you first saw it.
No, it's not a good movie, but I think it's extremely entertaining. I have it on Blu-ray.
I thought it was so bad it was entertaining, but yeah, it's not a good movie.
It's so bonkers. Like Brando having the white paint to reflect the sun and wearing the ice bucket on his head and having the, like, Nelson De La Rosa dressed like him and playing the little piano at the same time. I mean, all that stuff is just, it's so crazy. Like, I just can't look away
from
it.
Well, there's tons of meaningless scenes that do not advance the plot at all.
Exactly. I'm watching it just going, like, what am I... And Val Kilmer's just doing whatever the fuck he wants, like, doing, Purple Haze a cappella, talking about drugs and handing out drugs to animal people and imitating Marlon Brando. I mean, the whole movie, I've seen it a couple times because I really enjoy watching it.
But, yeah.
I have it on Blu-ray. You know, I enjoy it. It's not a good... I wouldn't call it, man. I know I am sick. I have a problem. But I enjoy it. I wouldn't call it a good movie, though.
I want to say that I absolutely hated this when I saw it back in 96 when I think I hit VHS. I was just like, what is this crap? This is ridiculous. Only because I had seen the Burt Lancaster one previously to that, and I thought, well, like I said, I really enjoyed that, but, oof, man, it was bad. And that was the last time I'd seen it. It was like, I had no more desire to see it after that. And
should check out Island of Lost Souls. It's pretty good.
I probably think I've even got it, because there was a, those big 50 movies for $5 box sets. They have the old public domain films. There was I'm sure it's in there, and I've got that sitting in the garage, so I'll have to check it out.
That's funny because it is absolutely not public domain in this country.
It's like I said, it's on the $2 things over here everywhere. So
here it's like a universal Criterion property.
Yeah.
Wow. Really? It's okay. Like,
yeah. It's yes. Criterion Collection. Here.
Okay. Unless
which
look,
might be different
look, honestly,
in Europe and Australia.
Honestly, look, I might be wrong. I might be thinking of other Battle of the Ghosts movies, which are public domain, which is a lot of them.
A lot of them are.
Like yeah. Devil Bat and you know, Spooks Run Wild, Murder and all those films. Huh? Oh yeah, yeah.
Murder by Television's one. There's a bunch of them.
And there were a couple of people in this movie that didn't get interviewed. Like Ron Perlman was in it.
Yeah,
And Mark Dacascos was in it too.
Isn't he dead?
He was not.
Mark Dacascos is still around.
Oh, okay.
He plays WoFat on Y5O, the new one.
Really?
And okay. Does he still
yeah,
do
he's
the,
got a regular gig playing a villain in that.
Good
doesn't
on
he still doesn't he isn't he still on oh no, he's not on Iron Chef America, is he?
He hosted it for like 6 or 7 years.
Yeah, he was on it for a while, but
yeah, that was his bread and butter. That pretty much brought home the bacon.
Oh, get the fuck out. Was that him? Who used to go Chef Boyf? Holy shit. I had no idea. I used to think this guy's annoying. I had no idea it was Mark Dacascos.
Yeah, and he's in Brotherhood of the Wolf, which, you know, is a really cool movie.
Oh, wow, that's so fucking cool. And, I had no idea.
And he was in the Crow TV show, Stairway to Heaven.
Yeah.
There's a resemblance to Brandon Lee, which is
yeah, he's got that Asiatic look to him, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Double Dragon, classic.
But he's also in that Golden Harvest production with Coolio, directed by Stanley Tong. I forget the title. It's really bad.
Best name ever, Stanley Tong. That's an awesome name.
He was also in a really rad movie, Crying Freeman.
Yeah. Kind of forgot because it was never released in the U.S.
I need to watch Crying Freeman again. I've only seen it once, but I'm going to watch it before we do our Christoph Gans show.
Okay, yeah, I might need to look at it again.
Mm-hmm. And one of Andrew Farmer's favorite movies, I Am Omega.
Of course it is.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Of course it is. Yeah.
He's kind of I think Hollywood missed the boat on him.
They really did because he's awesome. He's awesome in like Brotherhood of the Wolf and stuff like that. He's really cool.
Well, that's because he's not white.
Well, yeah.
I mean,
I hate, you know, I'm a liberal American. I hate whiteness. I don't like white people.
But no, there's really.
I only point out race when a white person does something wrong.
You don't like white people and lions, right?
Yeah, white people, because white people kill lions.
Well, dentists kill lions.
They're the only, only white people are dentists.
Well, Hollywood has this tradition of only allowing one non-white lead to get all of the, like, one Asian lead to get all the Asian roles.
Right.
Like, if it's got Jet Li for productions, they don't really care about any other actor.
Unless they go to the, as Andrew Farmer calls it, the racial Rolodex and just wheel out everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's like, okay, Asian woman's gonna be Lucy Liu, even though it's a town full of far better-looking women.
We need an ugly Mexican, Danny Trejo.
Danny Trejo, yeah.
He's like 70 now.
We need a good-looking Mexican. Is Antonio Banderas still around? I don't know.
Yeah, it was actually Spanish.
Yeah.
Whatever, same thing.
Yeah, that's the way Hollywood sees it.
Yeah, exactly.
He used to be the thin gay guy from like the Almodovar movie.
Oh, I know. That's what's so funny is he has that background of being in Almodovar films.
And now he's like macho superstar over here.
Oh, he's
El Macho. He's a Ricardo Montalban.
El Macho.
But yeah, the I liked Fairuza Balk and Dr. Moreau, and that's pretty much about all I thought was positive.
Oh,
like when she says something to Brando, like "Father," and he's like, "Oh, well, yeah, you're beautiful."
But now she sounds like Marlon Brando when she talks in the documentary.
I know she does.
Struggling to really understand her. It talks like
I know,
yeah, yeah.
She looks like drugs and plastic surgery. I hate to say it. Or dieting and trying to stay too thin. She's trying to stay a little too thin, you know?
She looks very rail thin, yeah.
And they have that low... They try to keep that very low body fat when they're in their 40s, which never looks good.
You know? No, they become very sinewy looking. Like,
yeah,
like, what's her name? Oh, the bloody woman. I saw her running along the streets here in Melbourne. What was her name? Liz Hurley. That's it. Elizabeth Hurley.
Yeah.
She looked terrible when I saw her. I'm like, oh. She looks like a bag of veins. That's about it. It's horrible.
If you look at the ones that held up pretty decently, like Raquel Welch or Sophia Loren, they kind of allowed a little bit of weight gain.
Yeah.
Well, so Barbara, they don't look bony. And
Barbara Hershey as well.
Yeah,
good for her age, exactly. You know?
When they're too thin, it's like their skin looks stretched over their bones. It's just
especially really as you get older, it's not right.
Yeah, it just doesn't look good.
And the problem is they go to their physical trainer, and the physical trainer's got them like doing kettlebell swings and all this CrossFit crap.
CrossFit is bullshit. Yeah, okay? Yeah.
CrossFit is a load of shit. Stop it. If you're CrossFit, fucking stop.
By the way, you'll get emails from 40 or 50 angry listeners like, hey, bro, you come down to my box.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Stop it with
your
fucking... Tell
me if you could do a muscle up, bro.
Oh, okay, okay. You know, keep doing your go read some more Ayn Rand, weirdos.
No, they read Henry Rollins columns.
Oh, God.
Yeah, they listen to, like, Rage Against the Machine all the time. Bro, I obey the iron. It's like, you're not puking, it's not a workout.
The iron.
All right.
It's the best antidepressant I've ever come across.
if we could just verge off into horror territory for 2 seconds here, listeners. The unrated producer's cut of Halloween 6, The Curse of Michael Myers, is now getting a standalone release on Blu-ray. Thank you for $10. Nice. So now you don't have to buy that big-ass box set just to get that.
Which I already bought, so...
Yeah.
Is it any better?
Way better. Way better.
Okay. It's way better. It's still not like a great movie, but right. It's way better.
I would put it honestly, like in the list of Halloween films, I'd put it in my top four. I'd say for sure. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. It beats a lot of the others. I enjoy it more than H2O.
It beats 5. It beats H2O. It beats Resurrection.
Beats 4 as well. I think 4 is not that good.
You know,
I think they're all terrible except for the first one.
Yeah, of course you do.
Four is entertaining. I don't think it's necessarily a good movie, but I like Halloween 3 quite a bit.
Oh yeah, 3's in my top 3. 3's probably my top
Everybody
2 actually.
Everybody says it's horrible because it doesn't have Michael Myers. I think it's good because
I think it's horrible because it's retarded.
I think it's fun. I don't know.
No, I really enjoy Halloween 3 a lot. I've seen.
Oh no, my friends over at the CineSludge podcast love it too. Believe me, you know, it's like I've said to their face, I think it's retarded.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just like it. I think it's a fun like Twilight.
It lost me when I was a kid when Tom Atkins goes into the hotel and the clerk looks just like Henry Fonda on Golden Pond. It's like what we can't get anything from real life to look sort of hometownish here. We gotta imitate what we see in movies and like. Well, Dan O'Hurley has like a whole headquarters of guys looking like it's like a James Bond movie. They're all wearing.
The worst part to me was Tom Atkins getting it on with Woody Allen's ex-girlfriend.
Too young for both.
It's just jealousy because Tom Atkins is the man. That's all it is from you guys.
Well, I mean, if it was Tom Atkins, you know, Tom Atkins is, if you look up Pussy Magnet, in the dictionary, you'll see a picture of Tom Atkins.
Tom Atkins' career is based around just saying, get in the truck, Pliskin.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, I said it.
Anyway.
Yeah.
So back to Island of Dr. Moreau. The documentary.
Yeah.
What did we think about this as a documentary? In terms of what it has to say about the project.
I really enjoyed it. When you guys brought it up, it was like, sounds interesting. I remember seeing the movie, obviously, and I'm like, I was not that familiar with all the, all the bullshit that went behind the scenes in getting this film made and everything else. So I was, I'll check it out for sure. Did it make you want to go and watch the film afterwards? Boy, I don't know.
Made me want to watch it again.
Not me. I was like...
It made me want to go read the old story.
Oh, the story's good.
I'm actually interested in reading the old story again. I haven't read it in years.
The story's really good. It's basically a proto-vegan screed. Because it was Wells, who was a big-time Stalinist socialist. It was a anti-vivisectionist story. Because that was the thing. So it's like an animal rights manifesto almost.
Well, what blew me away was when, I don't know if I should reveal it, because it's a great surprise in the documentary for literature buffs, is when he says that Joseph Conrad ripped off Kurtz.
I thought that was really interesting.
And Wells really felt like it led to a falling out because he was offended. He's like, you stole my character.
And that
blew my mind.
And Conrad claimed that Kurtz was based on like Stanley's great grandfather or something. Mm-hmm. who was this famous explorer.
Stanley ties things together rather oddly.
Yeah.
You know, because I'd heard stories, and this did not make it into the documentary. Richard Kuhn wanted me to mention it, but I had heard that when Fairuza Balk was on the set down there, supposedly the CIA had spies watching her.
What?
Because of her, I don't know if it was her ties in Wiccanism.
Ties to Stuart? To Stuart?
I think it actually was.
No ideas, but...
You know, it's the difference between...
I think it's the Wiccan thing.
Yeah, because she's into the whole Wiccan, yeah.
Yeah, and I think at that time it was a scary idea or whatever, but I don't know if it was an MK Ultra nonsense thing, but supposedly the CIA was watching her. And they kind of imply it like it was almost a joke in the movie, but supposedly like she did like threaten to slit her wrist when she heard Stanley was being fired.
Yeah, he claimed
big scene.
He claimed she threatened to cut her heart out with a sushi knife or something.
Right, I think she was threatening to slit her wrist. The version I'd heard, she threatened to slit her wrist. But if he says cut her heart out with a sushi knife, okay, I'll take it for his word.
And that's such, even if it's fake, it's such a great Richard Stanley-esque embellishment.
She threatened to cut her heart out with a sushi knife.
Well, he had also. That years before Asia Argento was making movies like Scarlet Diva, mm-hmm. Richard Stanley kind of put the word out that she had a butterfly tattoo above her pubic region.
Oh, is it a butterfly?
And of course, everybody saw it in Scarlet Diva, but, you know.
Was it a butterfly tattoo or an angel that she has?
Or angel or whatever the hell it is. It's like I think it is an angel.
I always thought Asia Argento had the trashiest tattoos.
Yeah, well, that was his girlfriend for a few years or
really?
A while or something.
She also dated.
Yeah, they don't get into it. Yes, exactly. And steps on his picture in Scarlet Diva.
Yeah.
But, I read in an interview Stanley was dating Fairuza Balk while they were working on
the film. Well, it seemed like. Cause
it
they
seemed
don't,
like it, yeah. It really
they
did.
They don't say it, but it definitely sounds like they were dating. Because, I mean, why would she threatened to cut her heart out with a sushi knife if the guy wasn't her boyfriend, you know?
They were basically having an affair. She was doing the sleeping with the director thing, so.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And,
good thing it was Polanski. She would have had to sleep with him. Ew.
Right, but...
No, way too old for that
shit. She's too old for him.
Man, are you kidding me?
Way too old for him.
He'd be like, get out of here, you old hag.
That's true. It had to be Natasha Kinski's age.
Under 12, sir.
Yeah, no, that's right. That's
Polanski.
There can't be grass on the field, you know.
That's the age of consent in Polanski's world is 11 or 12.
Yeah. 13's pushing it, like
right.
That's like I'm almost Fairuza Balk being like 20, and this should be like, hey, you old slag, get out of here. You're all washed up.
But yeah,
which actually, Dad actually reckons that we might be related to her in some way when he was going back through the family tree a few years back.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, her spelling of her surname is just a little different. I mean, I'm missing a U in it, but yeah, he reckons that I brought it up, and he goes, hey, look, it might be possible. So I'll have to ask him when I speak to him next. No boring ass fact. I just thought I'd bring it up, that's all.
Genealogy, you know. Well, Stanley brings it up in his documentary.
You want another boring ass fact, John?
Mm-hmm.
Do you want another boring ass fact? The guy who directed the Search for Wing Wing documentary that we will be covering, mm-hmm. I promise you, There's a guy named Andrew Leovold. Ring a bell?
No.
Okay, he worked over at Wang's Chop.
Oh, he did? Okay.
Yeah.
I think that's how they got the name, because it was tied in with the search for Wing Wing.
Okay.
I think he knew the publisher and stuff. I haven't looked at those in a while. I forget. There's a lot of people who've written for them who will like message me and said, "Hey, I wrote for Wings." I was like, "Oh, really? Okay."
Okay. Yeah.
Because I mean, if you have an issue, it's massive. It's like a Sears catalog.
Yeah, they're pretty big. There's a lot of content.
I've read like 20% of the two issues I own. Like that's how thick it is, and it's small print. Like,
yeah, I've just read the articles you wrote.
Yeah, you get your money's worth, but you know it'll take you a while to read them. They're way bigger than the old flip sides.
Yeah, I'm just waiting for them to go online.
Yeah, they won't do it.
Yeah, no, great.
Print only.
Wonderful. Yeah, print only.
Sorry, they're bastards that way.
Yeah, that's all right. Favorite line? Okay, guys, favorite line in the documentary. I think I know it's pretty unanimous what it's going to be. But Hannah brought it up on social media earlier today.
I also made a tactical error. I then made another strategic error. I met Val Kilmer.
That was so funny when I heard that.
Oh, I died. I had to pause it because I was laughing so hard.
Yeah.
It was just like, well, that's where it all ended.
Yeah.
Although I don't think dabbling in the dark arts helped. Jesus Christ!
Holy shit! I mean,
no. When he talked about it, he was like, I. What did he say? It was something like, I had a warlock cast a spell before I made sign the contract.
And the warlock gets irradiated, and his hips rot out from underneath him.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
And then he says that I had a terrible dream that night that a sleep demon was sleeping on my chest.
Which is like, that's something that happens, like, to people.
Of course it does. Happens all the time.
That man does a lot of drugs, because if you look at him now compared to what he looked like 20 years ago, he's done some serious shit.
Yeah, and what was it? And he talked about, he was like, and then there were a hyena crossed my mother in Ireland. And there were hyenas on the wall print paper.
Get a load of this. He's told some interviewers he fought with the Muslims in Afghanistan when the Soviets invaded.
With the Mujahideen?
Jeez.
Yes!
So he was fighting alongside Rambo in Rambo 3.
Yeah, apparently. Yeah. And he supposedly left the war because his hardware script sold. Like, he had written it years before it sold, allegedly.
Went, all right. All right, my Muslim brothers, but I must abandon your fight against the Soviet menace. Because I must go make a movie about killer robots.
Allah Akbar.
Allah Akbar, and down with the Soviet Empire.
But you know, that's what makes his that whole documentary fascinating. He's a crazy man. He's a crazy man. You should give him $10 million, just make whatever the hell he wants.
Yeah, seriously, like
he's in Australia and just see what he turns in. Don't pester him, he's a crazy man.
He's like Colonel Kurtz. Like he really is like the real life Kurtz.
He even points out he would have had this movie with, like, dog men with machine guns, like, years before the Planet of the Apes movie.
I would have had...
The whole selling point was, like, a gorilla on horseback firing a machine gun.
I would have had Dr. Moreau as Jesus Christ, you know.
It was totally El Topo swipes.
I want I want each of the paintings to be like the Stations of the Cross, where Jesus falls for the first time, and a baby falls... slopes out of Jesus's womb, and he picks it up and holds it and carries it. And you'll see a dog man in the background licking the blood off the knife.
I'd always heard, and even Frankenheimer had said, Stanley wanted to make basically a Lucio Fulci movie or something. And no, he was trying to make a Jodorowsky movie. It's really obvious.
Yeah.
Well, and he's in the Jodorowsky's Dune documentary.
Yeah. It almost looks like the same interview session.
It does. It does. It's like the same like lighting and everything.
Mm-hmm. I bet it was from the same interview session.
Probably was. Yeah.
Yeah, just give him the money. Let him do whatever the hell he wants. I mean, I heard he's already turned in a script for a new Dr. Moreau movie.
I fought alongside Jodorowsky in the Falklands when the British invaded.
Yeah, I've seen Jodorowsky. He ain't fighting with those soldiers.
No.
But no, he's already supposedly sold the script to producers of a new Dr. Moreau that's truer to his old script, but I guess updated. You know, he's gotten some attention for this, at least. Like, maybe somebody will hire him to make a movie.
That would be pretty cool. Like everything he's done since Dust Devil has been kind of like little shorts, little like this, that. It's like all little.
Nobody wants to hire him.
Yeah, well, and like a thing like that is just career death in Hollywood. You know?
Well, if you think about it, okay, Hardware lawsuit from 2000 AD.
Yeah.
Dust
Devil. Had problems with Miramax.
Dust Devil, problems with Miramax. This Dr. Moreau fired.
Yeah.
None of his footage makes it into the final version. It's just, he's had a trouble-plagued career. And that's a problem when you get somebody who's probably just more creativity and talent than that business can really handle. Because I think to make it, you have to have a good business sense. And I don't think he has any sense of business.
Yeah. No, and it's very hard for someone like that to make it in the film world. And usually if they make movies, it's a couple like a Hodorowski, where they just get a couple out there and that's it. You know, we get documentaries 20, 30 years later about the projects that could have been.
Right. And always the projects that almost made it were way more interesting than what did.
Yeah. No, it's true.
Mean, without fail.
It kind of makes me wonder if the projects that we didn't get, it would have been that interesting.
I don't think Hodorowski's Dune would have been all that.
I don't think so, especially when you consider that Dan O'Bannon was going to be in charge of special effects.
Yeah.
Like, they have these magnificent drawings of these ships like leaking spice out into space, and they look beautiful. But then you think, like, the guy from Dark Star was in charge of that? Like, going to bring that to life? I just don't see it happening, you know?
Because it wouldn't. It would not have happened. It would have looked bad.
It just wouldn't have looked that good. Like,
it would have looked like a pop art joke or something. It wasn't going to do what Star Wars did. And
like, you know, I'm sorry, but you know, I realize he thinks that Doug Trumbull doesn't have the soul of a poet, but he will realize whatever vision you want from him.
Right.
You know?
He'll give you what you want.
He'll give you exactly what you want. I mean, like, you know, he's a great technician, and you know, just so what if he doesn't have the soul of the poet? You're the poet. You're the director. Get him to make the poetry for you. You know?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's...
Well, if you own the Criterion disc of Isle of Lost Souls, on there is a bonus feature, an interview with Richard Stanley.
Yeah.
Oh.
And he makes this whole like interview spiel about why really good science fiction movies aren't made. And his whole thing was like Hollywood views science fiction as an action genre. It's not an action genre.
It's absolutely
a genre
right.
Like, and he goes, and my script was a genre, was all ideas, and they don't want that. They want an action film. They're like, how can you make this an action movie? He says, and I can't remember if he blames Star Wars. I only saw this interview once, but he was just like, his whole thing was like, Hollywood will always view it as action films, and it's the genre of ideas and imagination, and they don't want to make those movies. And he's precisely right. If you look at everything that's been made in the last 25 years in science fiction, you don't find much real science fiction. A lot of these Marvel superhero movies, science fiction action movies, that's what they wanted. That's what they're churning them out.
Yeah.
Terminator Part 10, whatever.
If you get a science fiction movie, it's a low-budget indie. Like like Primer, Upstream Color, or
Cube. Whatever that movie. David Bowie's son made Moon. Whatever.
Moon, Ex Machina is a recent one that is really good, that Alex Garland wrote and directed, which I quite enjoyed.
Yeah, I haven't seen that yet.
It's really good. It has a Colonel Kurtz-like character, played by Oscar Isaacs. It's
every movie should have a Kurtz-type character.
He's
I think we'll have to do an episode where we all act like Kurtz.
We should.
And we just all really
have to, I want a snail.
Yeah, everyone in the life of grocery shops.
I saw a snail walking on the edge of a race.
Did you? Hey, if you want to see something really funny, look up Dusty Rhodes as Kurtz. And it's basically a Dusty Rhodes promo where he's wearing the Marlon Brando makeup from Apocalypse Now, and he's in front of a fire, and he's calling out Kabuki, who he's feuding with, and Crockett Promotions at the time. He's like, Kabuki, are you a soldier? Or an errand boy for grocery clerks? It's like stunning.
It's awesome.
Yeah, just Dusty Rhodes is Kabuki. The clip is out. I'll have to put it on the discussion forum.
Mm-hmm.
You should. Anyway, well, I think that's about winds it down. Is there anything else we want to say about this documentary, Lost Soul?
Give it ratings if you want.
Yeah. What would you give it, Stuart?
I'll give it about 7.5. I actually really enjoyed it. I didn't know what I was getting into. Like I said, I really was not a big fan of the finished product when it came out. And I'm like, well, I'll give it a watch, obviously, for this episode. But I really enjoyed it. I definitely recommend it. Give it a watch. Go out and rent it. Go buy it. Go watch it on Netflix, whatever your method is. But definitely worth the 100 minutes of your time, for sure.
Yeah, watch it and go watch the final film if you feel so inclined. Because I guarantee you, even if you hate it, you will be entertained.
The documentary is more entertaining than the film ever will be. Let's say that.
Yeah, it is.
It's certainly more interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the best of the missed opportunity filmmaking documentaries.
I think it's definitely better than Hodorowski's Dune. Like,
and I seriously doubt it's that Superman, what happened, or Death of Superman.
Yeah,
is even close to this. But I enjoyed this more than Electric Boogaloo. I enjoyed it more than Hodorowski's Dune.
It has so many fucking crazy stories. That's what's great about it. Like, yeah. And you even get footage of the sort of hedonistic parties going on in the hotel rooms in Australia.
Of course, it's because it's Australia, man. What the hell?
I forgot.
I know.
But I totally forgot Rob Morrow was cast in this thing. And I remember reading the headlines and back then it was Premiere Magazine and Movie Line and Jim Steranko's preview where you'd have to read all these things where it's like Rob Morrow leaves the set. It was like, what? What's going on? Why is Rob Morrow starring in this? It's like nothing made any sense.
The only documentary I'll say I've seen that comes close to this is one called Lost in La Mancha. The Terry Gilliam one.
I haven't seen it.
You haven't seen it? Okay.
I've heard it's good. Haven't seen it.
To get Don Quixote made, and just
I think isn't that kind of the godfather of these sorts of movies, the missed opportunity film.
That came out in 2001, 2002.
Early 2000s.
It was.
It's funny because I think they were. I think it's inspired by Hearts of Darkness, but an actual finished movie with Trouble Playing Apocalypse Now.
Yeah, that one, it's about the sort of problems making it, but the first, I can't think of a documentary before Lost in La Mancha about the movie that didn't get made.
I think it's the first.
Wasn't there one about the Orson Welles film that wasn't finished?
Which one?
I know.
There's they're trying to finish his last movie, Written on the Wind or something. That didn't get finished, but
I don't get the point because he's not alive to put his final stamp on.
I know it's,
and everybody acts like, oh my god, Magnificent Anderson isn't what we want it to be, and it's like he's not alive. Yeah. It's not going to be anything. It's not going to be an Orson Welles.
You know what's my favorite? What's your favorite Orson Welles product out there?
God, I like Touch of Evil, but I recently saw Lady from Shanghai, and I loved it. I thought it was great. And of course, I think Citizen Kane's a great movie.
John?
I love Lady from Shanghai. Lady from Shanghai, I think, is great. And I like Citizen Kane. Uh-huh. I love The Third Man, but he didn't direct it, so it's not an Orson Welles movie.
No. Right, it's Carol Reed.
Mine's are the Nashua commercials from the 70s. Nashua!
I know a guy who directed him in some commercials, and he told me he's this old guy. He was like a cameraman on The Godfather and Taxi Driver and Santa Claus Conquers the Martians. And he said Orson, you're really fat. Aren't you concerned about your health? And Orson Welles goes,
nope.
Michael, I promised myself that I would enjoy, if I became successful with films, I would enjoy good food, good drink, and good women. And I have done all of those things.
Good on him, I say.
He really, it's funny, I didn't know for years how close John Candy's impression on SCTV actually was. It's the real thing.
Yeah.
He would do some lame magic trick or something. Oh, doesn't he do great magic tricks?
I'm going to teach you all, the audience, about the art of illusion.
What was that horrible film he did in the 70s with, and don't say all of them, it was with Piers Adora, was it?
Butterfly?
Butterfly, that was it.
Yeah, you know who told me that was good? Vincent Gallo.
Really?
Of course he did.
Yeah, and
he goes, see Butterfly with
Piers. No, he literally said to me, he goes, fantastic. You need to see Butterfly. And I was like, wait a minute, are you talking about the Piers Adora, Stacey Keach movie? Yes, it's excellent. You should check it out. There's this scene in the middle of the film with the sunset. It's magnificent. I mean, He was really into that stuff. The guy knew his Italian trash.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just wanted to remember that had to be one of his last ones, surely. That was like 82 or something, I think it was. 81, 82.
He did the voice of a robot in the Transformers movie.
He was Unicron.
I am Unicron. Oh, yeah, that would have been. Oh, yeah, and the Manowar albums as well.
Oh, yeah, he did. He was on Manowar's Battle Hymns, and he was on Fighting the World.
Fighting the World.
And when they re-recorded Battle Hymns, the late Christopher Lee did the Orson Welles parts. So
it's a shit album, Battle Hymns. I do not like that one at all.
I think you never listened. I still haven't listened to Manowar.
Manowar's awesome. They're great.
Well, there you go.
Not as good as the games, but, you know.
Hey, Hunter, there you go. Rock Month next year, Manowar.
Yeah, Manowar. We'll do the Ross the Boss years.
Oh, yeah.
We'll go from Battle Hymns to Kings of Metal. There you go.
Oh, we get to hear that song on Kings of Metal. What is it? Where it starts off with that little boy going, "Grandfather, tell me a story."
Well, that's on the re-recorded version, which has Brian Blessed. Blessed going, and telling the kid a story on the
So wait a minute. So Man of War had some money behind him? Yeah. Was it major label?
I don't know. They had a big
They were on Megaforce, I think, for a number of years.
I think they were on Megaforce.
But
they were like, they couldn't draw a big, they only do like a couple of shows in America, but they tour Europe extensively.
Europe. You see all
that's where Thor the Rock Warrior is still popular in Europe.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. I was like,
festivals.
I'm sure.
Hopefully that documentary will be out.
I heard that Man of War called Twisted Sister, a bunch of girly men or something, and Dee Snider challenged them to a street fight or something.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I haven't seen them live in person, but I've seen Manowar live, and I've seen Twisted Sister live, and honestly, Twisted Sister blow them off the stage live. Manowar are boring. Twisted Sister are one of the most fucking, like, their songs are sped up to the max when they play them live. They just go all out. I mean, it'll knock you over when you see them. You'll think, oh.
Which they've only got a few shows left, I think.
Yeah. Twisted stays up, you know. They're pretty much done.
They are.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're going to call it a day, and just like Twisted Sister, and for this week anyway.
Fuck it.
What?
That's their tour. They're calling it 40 and fuck it.
Of course they do. It's Dee Snider. Of course they do. Could it be anything else? Really? God. Actually, if you guys, just to veer into another territory, like we never do that on this show, right? Twisted Sister, if you want to see a good interview, see the one with, oh God, what's his name, the guitarist?
J.J. French?
J.J. French, thank you. I'm blacking out today, something shocking. That one he does on YouTube, where it's just him sitting down for about 50-something minutes, insane. It's like incredible. It is the most dense 50-something minutes I've ever heard in an interview ever. It is.
So it's good?
Oh, God, man. You'll be riveted. You'll be like, man, I want this to go another 50 minutes at least, or another hour. Oh, nice. It's that good. Just the stories he tells are just crazy.
Oh, I'm sure he's got a lot of them. Yeah. I will say, though, like, Manowar challenging Twisted Sister, I wonder if there's some bad blood there, because two former members of the Dictators, Ross the Boss in Manowar, and Mark the Animal Mendoza in Twisted Sister.
You gotta really put some, I mean, I really doubt there's a lot of bad blood. I think it's more of a, you know.
Maybe from back in the day, but, you know.
It's a Ronda Rousey work.
Yeah. Oh, there you go. There you go. We... The Dictators are pro wrestling fans, after all.
you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
all right.
Let's wrap it up.
Yeah. Well, midnightmoviecowboys.com. Send us email at midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Look us up on Facebook. Thank you to everybody who's sending us nice messages. We read all of them, and we appreciate them. Been getting a lot of cool mail from people lately, telling us how much they like the show. And, you know, we love you back. We're trying to get some cool guests for you coming up. And, yeah, so any other business, gentlemen?
Oh, you can see this documentary on Netflix.
It's yeah.
Lost yeah. Soul. Go watch Lost. It.
It's quite good. We recommend it. John, what was your rating? We didn't give the final rating.
Oh, I give it an 8.5.
8.5? I'd give it an 8.
I actually watched it twice before we did the show. So
oh, nice.
Extremely rare for me. But I
and, yeah, I was going to say, I didn't expect you to like it this much, actually.
No, I dug it because I see the missed opportunity. And anybody who knows I'm a big fan of the old classic science fiction and horror stuff.
Absolutely.
You know, from the 19th century, because I love the ideas. So it's like, I respected what Richard Stanley was trying to do and was not able to do, thanks
yeah.
to
if anything, this, and yeah.
those geniuses that made their company bankrupt after releasing the Lord of the Rings trilogy.
I know. How do you fuck that up?
Keep that in mind.
You made Lord of the Rings, and then they put out, like, the Golden Compass and Semi-Tough and all this bullshit, you know.
No, it was Golden Compass, and there was one other movie, like The Great Ninzy or something, that
well, but I
Bob
remember
directed, and it cost a fortune. But still, didn't the Lord of the Rings movies make like $100 billion?
Well, then they made an insane amount of money, you know.
Like, what the hell is wrong with that company?
That should have made New Line the most powerful company in Hollywood instead of like a bankrupt them. It's like
instead they were absorbed by like Time Warner and
yeah, there's weird. Some serious mismanagement there.
Yeah, it was pretty bad.
Keep in mind, that's who hosed him over. And I always feel like they had it in for him from the beginning. That's the vibe I got from the doctor.
Exactly, well, that is a good point.
They all knew they were going
to
sack him.
Seemed to think, like, they all kind of talked about him like he was the weird kid, you know?
Yeah, well, like Bob Shea goes, who orders 4 sugars with black coffee?
I was like, what the fuck?
What's that
like,
really,
California
yeah.
idiot?
Jesus. I was like, what? I could not, when he said that, I was like, I don't get what he means by that, because I know plenty of fucking weird ADD people who drink tons of sugar with their coffee.
Who puts $100 million into the Golden Compass?
That's the more sugar for coffee, fucking.
Whoa!
So what? Bob Shea would have had a different opinion if he had put
the dozens, gentlemen.
So Robert Shea would have had a different opinion of Richard Stanley had he put one sweet and low in his coffee compared to 4 sugars. That's crazy. Fucking crazy.
That was
one of the more weirder comments of one of the weirder.
It's like, I don't understand what he's implying there. Like,
well, yeah. This just everything that's off kilter about Stanley doesn't seem as weird as Bob Shea. Just with that one comment, it's just odd. It's like, what are you judging people by how they drink their coffee?
Well, it just seems like a douchebag thing to say. Like, I'm just looking for something. Like, he's kind of a weird guy.
Maybe Richard Stanley's economizing by having just one coffee with 4 sugar instead of 4 coffees with 1 sugar in each one.
There you go.
Yeah.
What do you think of that, Mr. Money Man?
Well, it's like, well, if he was on the battlefields of Afghanistan, he probably learned to get as much sugar as you can. Because, you know, you could be starving for days.
Yes. Need all the energy you can get.
Exactly.
Sugar cubes.
Watching this documentary, though, for me, made me want to go out and watch Hardware again. I really do want to see that.
Yeah, I'm going to watch Hardware.
Yeah, mate, like soon. I said, I've been, you know, sort of, you know, not wanting to watch it for since 1990 when I watched it. But I'm like, well, now I really, my interest has peaked again to check it out and get a more of a fresher perspective on it. And whether I like it again or not, I don't know. But
I just watched Dredd again the other day. I showed a friend Dredd. So
what I am actually doing is I decided to dedicate the month of August to a recap month. So what I'm going to do is actually watch a film I haven't seen for years and years and see if it still holds up to this day. So one film a day. I did The Amityville Horror on Saturday. And what I actually do is I walk into the film, which I watch upstairs, with what I think it was at the time, like a rating out of 10, and then when it's done, what it is now when I watch it again. Amityville Horror, I went in there with a 7 out of 10, walked out with a 4 out of 10. It was just terrible. That's the James Brolin one.
Right.
And last night I watched Falling Down, the Michael Douglas.
Oh, how does that hold up? I haven't seen that since college.
Okay, I walked in there again with another 7 out of 10 and finished watching it last night with an 8.5 out of 10. I thought it was even better this time around.
Nice.
It really holds up well. So, really impressed with that flick. And
You know what I went back and watched was Seven Samurai. Hadn't seen that since college.
Yeah.
And that movie's perfect.
Well, you know what I watched for the first time this weekend because I watched this documentary?
What?
Was The Invisible Man with Claude Rains.
You haven't seen that?
I had never seen it. I had a Laserdisc and never watched it. I just never got around to seeing this.
I saw it for the first time a couple years ago, I loved it. What'd you think of it?
It's a masterpiece.
It's fantastic.
Like
it is.
If you played a drinking game with how many times he says, "Fools!" you would be dead.
Yeah.
And I remember watching my friend's kids one Halloween, and I brought Invisible Man and showed it to them, and they loved it.
Yeah, that was great.
It's actually my favorite of that Universal horror set that came out. It's my favorite of the lot in there.
It's great.
Yeah, it's
James Whale was the best of those directors.
My favorite is still Bride of Frankenstein, but
Bride of Frankenstein.
Invisible Man was really something. I was just like, finally, I saw this, and Claude Rains was just a phenomenal voice and presence, and it reminded me there's no good acting in horror films anymore.
Bride of Frankenstein, where Karloff has the blonde highlights in his hair, right? Like the Frankenstein's monster went out and got tips in his hair. That always is a sticking point.
Remember. I guess because of the fire, to represent the fire that he survived.
Yeah.
I just remember him talking a lot, going, "Arr!" You know.
Yeah. I mean, I like Bride of Frankenstein, don't get me wrong. I mean, they're all 10 out of 10 for me.
Yeah.
Except for The Phantom of the Opera with Claude Rains, which I like. It looks great, but it's...
When I need to go back and watch that, because that was my favorite movie when I was a kid, when I was a little kid, and I need to go back and watch it, because I haven't seen it since I was, like, single digits.
Yeah. I will say
I saw it when I was a little kid.
I watched Creature from the Black Lagoon in 3D upstairs, and damn, man, the 3D net's good. It is fantastic.
I have never seen that movie. That's the
3D's good in the theater when they do the revival showings. It's actually one of the only times I thought the 3D actually works.
It does. You get really immersed because you're in the swamps and all that, and wherever the hell they're at, and it's really well done. And I want to see Revenge of the Creature in 3D. I'm hoping that comes out to...
Is that the one with Clint Eastwood?
Yeah. Yeah, briefly,
He's like, "Oh, I don't know where I put the mouse," and he opens his pocket and pulls it out.
There's the mouse.
And you hear like the Hanna-Barbera, "Wah, wah, wah," type thing.
That was the last funny thing Clint did. But yeah, I want to see that. I hope they bring it out in 3D, Revenge of the Creature, because I like that one as well. I actually like all three Creature movies, even The Creature Walks Among Us. I quite enjoy that one. Bit like the Fly movies.
I think all three are fun.
Yeah, even like the Fly movies with Vincent Price, the Fly, Return of the Fly, Curse of the Fly. I like all those. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, we're rambling now. We're just padding.
Yep.
So we'll catch you guys next week with another flick that we're going to do, which we'll nut out shortly after the show and work out what we're doing. Right. So sign off, lads.
Adios.
Mahalo.
Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast. To leave feedback and show suggestions, email us at midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like our Midnight Movie Cowboys show page on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at MMCowboys. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and feel free to leave us a review. Listen to us on Stitcher.com or the Stitcher Radio app. Want to help the show out? Visit MidnightMovieCowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate link. We appreciate all donations of any denomination. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Our personal links are on the right side of our homepage. See y'all next time.
Fifteen years.